As I mentioned at the start of Mass on this Respect Life Sunday, Bishop Soto has asked all the priests in the diocese to focus on issues of life. Back in 2002, Belgium became only the second country to legalize nationally euthanasia. It was for one group of people. It was for those who were terminally ill, diagnosed by a doctor to have a terminal illness. They could be euthanized, and anybody with a terminal illness. In 13 years, only 13 years, this summer, they passed a new law. The law now states, anyone with severe or incurable distress can be euthanized. Okay, what qualifies for severe or incurable distress? Let me give you a few examples. A man who was afraid that he might go blind. A woman who had lost the desire to live. A man who went in to have an operation to become a woman, the surgery didn't go well and was distressed afterwards. A woman suffering from depression, suicidal thoughts, and so forth. It's come to the point where any adult, basically, can go in and be euthanized. But that's not the end of the law. And what a perfect day to have a little boy come up here on Respect Life Sunday. Oh, we've got to guard his life so he doesn't trip over those steps. Thanks, Robert. But that's not the end of the law. The law goes further and it says any parent can have their child euthanized up to the age of 18 if they deem that their child's life is too distressful. There's one more step. Any child, once they reach the age of reason, 7 years old, can go in and request to be euthanized without their parents' consent if they're being bullied on the playground and don't want to go on any longer, or for whatever other reason. It's just madness. And it started simply with terminal illness. Do you know who the first person in Nazi Germany who was euthanized? What ultimately led to the concentration camps? What was Germany trying to do? There were eugenicists who wanted to purify the human race and especially the German population. And so they wanted to get rid of any imperfections, any faults. The first person euthanized was a young boy who had a hair lip. A young boy with a hair lip, and it led to the concentration camps. My brothers and sisters, either all life is sacred or no life is sacred. And as soon as in a culture a certain portion of the population is deemed as not worthy of life, ultimately it follows that no life is considered sacred any longer. In our country, the founders of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, do you know why she initially opened up Planned Parenthood? It had nothing to do in trying to allegedly help mothers who were struggling or mothers who had an unexpected pregnancy. Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist who studied with the same doctors who founded the concentration camps in Germany. They were in class together. She founded Planned Parenthood in black neighborhoods, in African American neighborhoods primarily, to get rid of that weakness in the human race. Then it was opened up to people who were suffering physically, mentally. Now we have, 40 years later, 50 million people of our population eliminated. And now it doesn't have to be for any reason whatsoever, then you don't want the pregnancy. My brothers and sisters, it all starts with one aspect of a population being deemed as not sacred any longer. I don't know if you've had a chance, and maybe you weren't even interested. In the last 6 weeks, all those videos came out on Planned Parenthood, where it's been discovered that they're now harvesting child parts and selling them to people. I think 5 or 6 videos came out. I couldn't even watch past the fourth one. I mean, it's so sickening, so vile. And when I was watching them, sadly so, I thought, you know what? Our population is going to see this and people are going to go, gosh, that's a shame. I'm glad I don't support abortion. But is anything actually going to be done? Is anything going to follow through? I don't personally think so. I think we've become so desensitized, so numb, that we're not even active anymore in trying to overcome a Holocaust in the United States that's far worse than the concentration camps. In the last year, if you recall, about a year ago, a gentleman came and visited me in my office, and he asked me to pray over him. He said, "I feel like I'm spiritually attacked." I said some real simple prayers, and he and his chair went flying across the room. Slams against the wall. He's slammed against the wall repeatedly till he's back in a corner, and he's being pummeled by something that neither of us can see. He was demonically possessed, a bodily possession. Well, because of that, I've realized that, okay, we're spiritually attacked far more than we realize, and we don't have to be bodily possessed to have openings that allow evil spirits to afflict us. And so I've established a ministry, a healing and deliverance ministry, and it's been amazing, some of the healings that have taken place. So people will come and they'll say, "Gosh, Father, I'm struggling with suicidal thoughts. I'm struggling with an addiction to pornography. I'm struggling with depression," and so forth. And they're receiving real healing and freedom. It's been amazing. Well, one day a woman comes, and there's been a number of women who have come for this reason, and actually even some men. And this woman comes and she says, I'm plagued by an abortion that I had 30 years ago. "My brothers and sisters, as a priest for the last 10 years, I have not found greater suffering than those women and men, but primarily women, who have had abortions. And they simply cannot get past them, no matter how many times they go to confession, no matter how much counseling they receive. Actually, typically, they're not even able to say the word. They can't mention it." So this lady comes to me and she said, "Father, I had an abortion, and I constantly think about, is God gonna still love me? Am I going to be able to go to heaven?" So what we do in these sessions, we renounce whatever spirit might be behind what they're suffering. So a person will say, "I renounce the spirit of pornography. I renounce the spirit of depression." So I said to this lady, "I want you to renounce the spirit of abortion." And she goes, "Okay." Now, when it is something they're afflicted by spiritually, it's very difficult to even say the words. She says, "I renounce the spirit of abortion. And I command it to leave me." She said it so simply. I'm looking at her. This woman couldn't even say it in confession. I had to say it for her. And it just rattles off her tongue. And I think, okay, what is related to abortion? I thought maybe it's not a spirit of abortion. Maybe it's another spirit. Because any abortion, it's satanic ultimately. Satan is the father of... I thought abortion is murder. I said, "Okay, I want you to renounce the spirit of murder." She said, "In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ..." And all of a sudden, she broke down sobbing. For 5 minutes, sobbing, and she could not get control of herself. What led her to have the abortion was not a spirit of abortion, it was a spirit of murder. Why? Why are people plagued for decades after something they've done and they've gone to confession for? Because on some level, and I don't think any woman is thinking this when she goes for this, or any man who brings her, or friend who brings her, but on some level they know, or they come to realize, "Oh my gosh, I took the life of my own child." What I have found is a woman cannot be healed, and a man cannot be healed until they come to recognize the sacredness of that child's life. And so I lead him through a little process where I say, "I want you to ask God, was my child a boy or a girl? Lord, did you bless me with a son or a daughter?" And so they start to recognize the identity of their child. And it's so beautiful where it'll be things like they'll be walking through a mall. You know, it's not like they're just in prayer and all of a sudden they know. They'll be walking through a mall and they'll see a little girl, you know, being held on her hand by her dad. And they'll go, "Lord, I had a daughter. I had a little girl." And then I say, "Okay, now I want you to name your child. You are this child's mother. You're this child's father. Have you given your child a name?" And once they name their child, then I say, "Okay, I want you to ask your child by name to forgive you for taking their life." Because it's only when they know their child's forgiveness that they can believe God can forgive them and they're allowed to forgive themselves. And then they have a relationship with their child who loves them and who's with God and who wants them to join them in heaven for all eternity. Mother Teresa, she one time, she was visiting a very poor family's home in India, and she walked in and she was stunned by what she saw. There was a family with 12 children with one bed in the house for the parents. The kids slept on the floor. They couldn't even hardly feed their children. And she noticed that the youngest child was a child who was so terribly deformed. I think in the past you would have said it was a mongoloid. And she looks at this child and she thinks, oh my gosh, how are they going to be able to handle this child? And so she immediately says to the parents, you know, we have orphanages that we run if you want us to take your child for you. And she said from that moment on, she would never assume what the parents felt because they were deeply offended. And they said, Mother Teresa, you haven't even asked us our child's name. She said, what did you name your child? The translation in English for the Indian dialect was the teacher of love. We knew when we saw this child, when this child was born, that she would teach us how to love. What's happening in the United States when some couples find out that their child might have a birth defect, psychological, a physical handicap? The doctors not only recommend but strongly encourage not carrying that pregnancy through. My brothers and sisters, this is where we've come. I close with this. I'm glad I'm giving this homily a year before. We are in an election year. We're about to be in an election year. I was walking home from school one day in the seminary with a pack of seminarians, American seminarians. And one guy asked me, he says, Jeremy, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And I said, honestly, I said, I don't identify myself as one or the other. I typically vote as a Catholic. You know, so if even generally I would tend to vote for a certain party or members of that party, if there was someone in the opposite party who more favored Catholic positions, especially on moral issues, I would vote for that person. And this guy says to me, and I was shocked. He says, oh, so you're a single-issue voter. My brothers and sisters, what's a single-issue voter? It's the term, derogatively, that's been given to people who will not vote for pro-abortion candidates. And I looked at this guy and I said, well, let me ask you a question before I answer your question. I said, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And I can't remember what he said. And I said, let's say you have a member of your party who's running for office, and you love, you totally support every single thing that he or she stands for. Except for one thing. That person comes out and says, I think we need to reinstitute slavery in our country. Guy looks at me and says, that's ridiculous. Who would ever say that? I mean, are you kidding me? We would never subject part of our race again to slavery. And I said, well, let's just speak theoretically, though. Would you vote for that person? Absolutely not. That's crazy. So I said, then you would be a single-issue voter. I said, abortion is a far, far graver evil than slavery ever was. It's not subjecting part of our race. It is killing part of our... It is murdering part of our race. Darn right. I would never vote for someone who's pro-abortion. My brothers and sisters, I honestly don't know how Catholics can with a clean conscience. If we really look at it for what it is, okay, I support everything. I like their immigration policy. They're not pro-death. But they are in favor of murdering innocent little babies. May we ask our Lord today for the grace that if there's any dimension of our lives that we are not pro-life, that He convert our hearts.